I think it's more on the supply side. And on the supply side, I can definitely, see that that can't come on, that this number is not going to meet, this
right.
This demand level. So I think copper's become less of a, let's say, an EV or a carbon neutral technology story rather than a supply constrained story.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
All right, sure. How's it going, man?
It's going good. Thanks for coming up on board. You're quite the traveler here. Whether it's going out on site on different projects or whether it's going to different conferences and speaking. So things are starting to really move. And I should say, hopefully at the start of things to move in the junior mining sector, specifically the explorers is what you specialize in. So just want to get your thoughts first. What are you seeing? What are you feeling at the different talks and conferences that you're giving, as well as talking with the different companies yourself? What are you seeing and feeling?
Well, I mean, I guess like at the beginning, last time we talked was before Christmas,
yep,
I believe. And, the tone was very, the sentiment was very negative. And that negativity probably rolled right into the conferences in Vancouver, the Roundup, the VRIC, the Metals Investment Forum that I went to. And then by the time we got to PDAC, I would say, there was more sentiment towards industry players doing strategic investments and stuff like that, such that on the floor of PDAC, not a lot of the CEOs were actually in their booths of companies. More of them were in the rooms talking to companies. Because as we know that, M&A activity has been picking up, a good marker of that in the gold sector would be the multiple bid for Osino, which we haven't seen for a long time. And not off, a lows and not a take under or anything like that, a decent price, and then another price that was over that, and importantly, all cash. And now we just saw another one for Argonaut by Alamo. So all that is very positive for the sector, because usually that kind of M&A precedes price action, or at least where people think that, this company is just going to be worth more in another 6 months, so we got to act now. There has been no problem with price. So price has now been leading. The problem has been the impact on if we stick to gold equities, and we're not seeing the kind of leverage we saw before. And we might have discussed that before, why we haven't seen leverage. My idea was, some of the gold buying has been from central banks, and that doesn't usually spill over into equities. I think now the buying now is a little bit more ETF. And so that is spilling into equities. The other thing is M&A. That should spur on more movements in stocks, which we hadn't seen a lot of last year, especially in the precious metal sector. I would say also is the leverage companies offer has been, restrained is a good word, because of the costs, labor, energy, all these other costs are coming into producing the ounces has come up faster than the gold price. The other thing I would say is they all, some of them increase their reserve prices. And when you increase your reserve price, you bring more low grade material that requires, more trucks, more fuel, more labor to produce that ounce. And so those are probably coming in at a lower margin than the ounces you produced at the lower reserve price. So that leverage is something people have been looking for before they step into the sector. And another thing I'd point out is people that are transferring from sectors saying, maybe they won big on AI or on the tech sector, looking for generalists, looking for another undercapitalized sector, are looking at, you know, the metal sector or the resource sector. But their problem is that, you know, these companies for them are not liquid enough. And so they almost need them to come a bit before they come down on, you know, your intermediate producers, let alone your developers, and not even talking about your juniors. Because for some of these firms, you know, microcap is $1 billion market.
Right. Right. Yeah, I've heard that a lot too, is the liquidity just right now isn't there. That being said, if they start to move, and it's kind of like what comes first, the chicken or the egg, you know, but if they start to move, the liquidity will come, I believe at least, but we shall see.
The thing is that some of that demand has probably been siphoned off, you know, a bit from the equity ETFs, Bitcoin maybe. So we didn't see that the last time we had, you know, gold equities trading at, let's say, 2+ price to net asset value. I don't think that we get back to that point. What people are just looking for is better than one.
All right.
And right now we haven't seen that yet. So once we start seeing that, I'm sure that people will start coming back in into the market, into the equity parts of it.
Got it. Now you've been across the pond. Is it the same mood, if you would, over there with investors as well as with companies? Or is everybody still skeptical and worried or even afraid of this space?
Well, I guess, you know, what we were seeing is like, if I look at those conferences in Vancouver versus PDAC, and now at the Swiss Mining Institute, which was at the more in the March timeframe, the sentiment has been improving.
It has,
you know, and you know, because they've been seeing the move in the precious metal prices, especially gold. People are bullish on the metal. They're also seeing, you know, movements in industrial metals like copper that they like. And there was a good reflection of that in the companies that attended at the Swiss Mining Institute. So most of the mood was positive. The negative sentiment was that most of these companies didn't have a lot of working capital to do much.
Right.
And so I guess it's the next wave of recapitalization that we're waiting for to fund the next season of Catalyst. Because I think as this S&P market intelligence group pointed out, like, you know, with the reduction in financing for a lot of these companies, especially in the gold sector, we're seeing less drilling, which generates less, you know, news flow and catalysts going forward.
Right.
We need capital.
Where do you see the money coming from, if you would, if it's not going to be from retail investors? Is there, I don't know, another big whale of investor out there? Or
Well, I think, like, depending what we call retail, I think there's a lot of like family offices, high net worth individuals that will roll back into the resource sector. The thing is that those guys would probably be, I don't know if they'd be taking the space of retail as much as maybe some of that institutional equity that doesn't exist anymore, but they'd be filling a role in terms of funding this next generation of assets. But I think regardless, we still need a reduction of the companies and more focus. And that way we can increase the liquidity of the individual companies, reduce their G&A, and prioritize their asset portfolio so most of the money goes into the best projects.
I'm glad you said that, because as an investor, that's one of my biggest fears, if you would, is that I'm really subsidizing a lifestyle as opposed to a project that I believe in or that has been sold to me.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that you don't want money going to, you know, like with flow through, you know, unincentivized investors that buy into a company only for a tax benefit for themselves, rather than by ticking all the boxes that you would for investing in that company, you know, whether it's management, the asset, the results, the upcoming catalysts, all that other stuff they don't care about. So you've got a whole bunch of disincentivized shareholders that are taking a position in a company, and then 4 months they're going to be gone.
Right.
So definitely what you want is that kind of company that you believe in with the right management team. Those are the ones that should get funded. The problem is that there's still these other companies out there that are also seeing money come in and hence, you know, the drop in exploration discoveries and things like that.
Got it. Now, again, looking at the past 3 months in the rear view mirror, we're going into, or we're in the second quarter right now. What do you see things improving then gradually or maybe immediately as the year progresses?
Well, what I'd like to see is signs. Like during my, during PDAC, I talked about, you know, this Lions Group Metals, I think it's called, or Lions Selection, have an investment clock. I added some things to it, but we're seeing all those signs of a sector turnaround. And, you know, for me, one of the most important is the M&A activity in the precious metal sector. But now we need that recapitalization.
Yeah. Like,
because these guys need to go, most of them need to go back to the market before they can fund their next exploration program.
Right.
This summer, which usually happens around PDAC. But we haven't seen a lot of refinancing. We've seen people selling royalties. I just saw one where I believe it was Scotty Resources sold a royalty for $8 million to Franco. Not a big deal for Franco. You know, they probably won't miss the money at all, but a big deal for that junior. But it's not a great sign that the recapitalization involves selling royalties right now. I would prefer that, you know, that they actually raised hard dollars, you know, in equity rather than start, you know, diluting the asset.
Right. Catalyzing the asset. Interesting. I guess the next question I have is, let's talk about industrial metals, and I'd like to talk about jurisdictions. Last time we talked, you were very focused, or you were optimistic, if you would, on the price of copper. And if I'm recalling my conversation correctly, it's just because obviously the supply deficit, or the coming supply deficit of copper. And then really the demand hasn't really gone down that much. So talk a little bit about that. Where are you at with copper and your outlook with copper from now until really the rest of the year or rest of the next couple of years? Has that changed at all?
So the signs, I mean, if people understand what the copper market is, as you mine the copper, and some of that copper, depending on the deposit style, is what we call oxidized or enriched material that through a process called solvent extraction electrowinning, we could produce cathode. So back in 2000, when I worked for Phelps Dodge, that processing and that type of deposit was a bigger part of the entire copper sector. Like it might've been, I don't know, 20%, 20-25%. That, because of where these deposits are, they're the easiest ones to process. Now all of them have been processed and now we're producing more sulfide material. So normally the sulfide material gets made into concentrate. That concentrate has to be smelted. Most of the smelting capacity is in China. So the two different prices that we look at is the price that everyone looks at is the refined copper price, which is the price for cathode. The other price that we'd look at is the price for the concentrate, which is called the TCRC price, which is the treatment and refining charges. So they work in opposite ways. So if you look right now, the TCRCs have actually dropped significantly. And why that is that China has been continuously building up their smelting capacity, drawing in more demand for concentrate. And now with the fact that Cobre Panama has been offline since November, there's a lot of concentrate that's not on the market anymore. And at the same time you're increasing demand for that concentrate, you've reduced supply. The TCRC dropped. And, you know, when I saw the TCRCs, well, like back in the 2000s when we had the Grasberg slide, I mean, that's when the TCRCs went negative because India was bringing on smelting capacity at the same time. But now we're seeing that kind of market. So concentrate, so anyone producing a concentrate right now is in a good spot. But the Chinese, to try and mitigate the fact that some of these smelters might not be making any money at these low TCRCs, they're delaying some of their expansion. They're deferring some production. I mean, from the smelters, or you know, and then advancing maintenance. So bringing some maintenance forward when the smelter will be down for 30 days to basically reduce their demand for the concentrate. But what that means is now there's less refined copper coming to the market. So the refined copper will be less coming to the market if the smelter capacity is reduced. So that'll have a good, that'll mitigate the TCRC somewhat, which I think are about $20 per ton and maybe 2 cents per pound. But it might increase the copper price, the refined copper price per capita. All that in the end would help producers and increase sentiment, boy sentiment for copper companies, whether developers or exporters.
Yeah. Okay. So that's really specific then to copper. Then is the copper price still affected because of negative economic growth in places like China and really the fear of recession here in the US?
Yeah. I mean, I think that near-term phenomenon has been holding copper back.
Okay.
This issue right now with Cobre Panama has been pushing copper forward, such that the deficits that we were thinking were coming in a couple of years are now forecast to be coming at the end of this year.
Wow.
Because not only Cobre Panama is offline, but you know, we don't have the incentive price for companies to develop new projects or even expand projects. So usually what you do when you do a forecast, you know, in terms of a supply demand forecast, you have a demand and you do a compound annual growth rate, you know, of whatever, 2 to 2.5%, and say, okay, this is the line of demand. And then you show, okay, here's the production from existing production, which usually tails off in about 5 to 8 years. Then you have all this new stuff coming on, which has got high probability. Then you got your possibles. The problem right now is that high probability stuff is probably either going to get deferred. So that's bringing that deficit closer, you know, because people are not incentivized to build because they don't see the returns.
Yeah.
So there's only a few projects that can make those returns. And then as you look at the capital blowouts of projects that are getting built, like Quebrada Blanca too, with Teck, people are scared. Building in that environment, you know, and producing a product that, you know, where they don't have the copper price to pay them back.
Got it. So let me really the two questions then. What is the, what would you say is the incentive price that would bring a lot more
copper?
A lot more copper online. Yeah.
Yeah. Right now we're over $4 a pound, which is not enough for these development projects.
Right. So
we probably need about $4.50.
$4.50. Yeah. Okay.
People will start putting projects into play. I mean, these are major expansions.
Right.
Like Codelco is sitting on a lot. I mean, because their problem is Codelco right now, which used to be the one of the biggest copper producers in the world, a state-owned copper company in Chile. Its production profile right now is back to what it was about, I don't know, 2 decades ago when it was just ramping up. And so now it's holding a lot of debt. And it needs to recapitalize a lot of these old projects. And it doesn't have the money to do it.
Ah, interesting.
So that is one issue. And then if you look at the big copper companies like Phelps Dodge, they do have some expansion projects and growth projects. But, you know, one of their big ones is El Abra, El Abra Sulfides in northern Chile. And they still haven't made a decision on that one to expand it. The one that is building, I know Capstone is building their Santo Domingo and Manto Verde complex in Chile. Mm-hmm. And they raised a good wad of money in the latter part of last year. And also, interestingly enough, is that they dual listed in the ASX. So the ASX... where I was earlier this year, they have come up with respect to being able, in terms of raising capital, to the point of the TSX and the venture, because TSX and venture has come down so much,
right?
And the ASX has come down somewhat, it's basically at the same level, or, you know, the trend is better for the ASX listed company. So there's not a lot of copper companies listed on the ASX besides Sandfire, basically, BHP, but copper pure, not so much. And so they're probably thinking that maybe I list there, I can attract those super funds, superannuation funds that want copper exposure, but they need to be listed on the ASX. So everyone's looking not only in terms of incentive price to build, but also capital flow and where do I get the money?
Yeah, that's really good information. I would have not guessed that. And maybe it's also because of the flow of money from Asia, the, you know, Australia being close. Being in Asia, more or less, the same time zone.
Australia's minerals resource, iron ore, copper, coal, goes to China.
Right.
So if they have any issues and the U.S. sort of push, and they get involved in that push to sort of compartmentalize China, they would be one of the worst hurt by that, because then they'll have to find new markets for all their minerals.
Right.
You know, whether it's India or the U.S. or somebody, but they haven't done much processing. They've done more mining. So the incentive for Australia right now is to build more processing domestically and send more refined product out. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think that would be a good thing for them to consider.
Sure. So you mentioned specifically to copper, you mentioned Chile. Let's talk about some jurisdictions. What's going on with places like Chile? And yeah, and talk to me, or really South America in general. What's going on? Is there a jurisdiction that you really love? And is there any place that you'd really want to avoid? And how do you see some of these issues getting worked out?
Yeah, every individual country obviously has its nuances. I mean, right now, jurisdiction, I'd probably say, in terms of infrastructure, ability to permit, in Brazil is probably one of the best right now. Yeah.
Okay.
But it doesn't have the endowment of copper that Chile or Peru have. So Chile, their problem right now, left-wing government, that most in the Chamber of Mines, one of the guys I met during PDAC, you know, they don't even know if they need to talk to the current government anymore. The guy's got another year or two. And so they'll probably just avoid him and then just go to the next one, because he's deeply unpopular and probably, dish sort of government win the next term. And so so there might be some drastic changes in Chile coming up in a year or two. But Chile's issues really are water. And that's been a problem, I mean, since I worked there in the 90s, but that problem has become more acute. Now everybody needs desalinized water. They can't, a lot of them can't compete for the water that's up there, whether they're competing for the water from locals or just that they don't want that water touched. It has to be desal. Also, power requirements, that's always an issue. But water is a huge issue in Chile, but also, most now up to the Western U.S., water's huge.
True.
So that will constrain some of this production, for sure.
Only putting pressure on the price.
Exactly. And so for me, there's no issue on the price. It's going up. But then how do you play that? You don't want to invest in that project that's not going to get built and is driving the price up, because I'll never get
built. Exactly.
Obviously, that project that will get built that is in production and won't get expropriated like Cobre Panama or something like
that. Done. Well, then what do you look for just specifically in a company? What boxes do you want checked if you're looking for a mine to be built or even a copper producer? What are you looking to see?
Well, I mean, in terms of production, you want something that's in the lower part of the cost profile, and that helps. That manage these near-term issues with slower growth, maybe, or some other issue, a recession in the U.S., that it could live through that. And then you want management teams that are looking at growth, You know, so there is some growth in there. So low cost growth, a hard combination to get, and well funded and access to capital. Jurisdictionally, in a place that they're not infrastructurally constrained by water or by power, which is hard.
Yeah. And
that's not easy to find. And then find out, like, you know, how they're going to get funded. Because now the U.S. government's pretty convinced that, you know, I don't know if they're convinced, but they seem to be more about funding processing than they are about funding mining. They're more willing to fund or help projects overseas with the raw materials, whether it be Brazil, Chile, you know, the Central African Copper Belt, by helping with the railway to get that copper into the market, but knowing that that market is the U.S. market. You know, so I think that they will fund process, whether it's a lithium carbonate, rare earth carbonates. I haven't seen a new copper smelter yet, but that's the sort of thing that they're willing to fund. But the problem now in Canada is that if, you know, this one minister said it during PDAC, I think it was, that, you know, the negative sentiment in the mining industry, the junior resource sector, you know, and the lack of funding can't be mitigated by Chinese funding. So that's a risk some of these companies take when they're in, let's say, a geopolitically risky jurisdiction that maybe somebody like retail won't fund them because they're worried about the sector, but the Chinese would, but they might not be able to accept that Chinese money because they're listed on the TSX and the Canadian government said, oh, you know what? You can't get that money. You know, so that might force some companies to list other places. You know, sure. Money is not coming from, you know, North America, and they can't get it from anywhere else, and the Chinese are willing to fund it, then it probably the best thing to do is delist and go private or something.
Well, Australia, a program. I'm sure they'll take your money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Australia can't really be that against the Chinese because, I mean, their relationship is such that the Chinese need their lithium, need their iron ore, and their coal as well. And they can't, you know, have that relationship, you know, just be cut off. And the Australians on their side can't afford for that to happen either. So there is a relationship there. And I'm sure they'll continue it to some respect. And I doubt the ASX will ever say boo against a Chinese company investing in you. But they will say boo if the Chinese company is investing in a uranium project in Australia. That's definitely never going
to happen. In crazy times.
So yeah, no, but I mean, that's all the stuff now we have to think about. It was just nuts. I mean,
right? Yeah, it's like how it's like they don't make it easy to invest.
No, they don't. They don't.
Yeah. They really don't. So we talked about copper and just briefly, any other industrial metals that are beginning to get your attention, like nickel? Other industrial?
Well, I mean, like Rick Rule says, you know, look at some hated sectors, and there's a few hated sectors.
Nickel's one of them.
And one of my talks at PDAC was from a rant that I had earlier this year called Why Nickel Sucks. Yeah. And apparently it attracted some people from Sudbury. And so after I gave this talk, I was accosted by the Sudbury CBC people in terms of, you know, why do I think this? What's going on? And I'm surprised they didn't know. You know, the nickel price is down 40-45% in 2023. You know, Indonesia's putting out all this production. Chinese are destocking, dumping it on the market. And the problem is there is no premium for green nickel.
Right.
You know, out of Indonesia, there is no premium for having IRA compliant nickel, you know, so you're not going to develop these projects, these low grade projects in Canada, you know, because the incentive price isn't there. Right. So what we're seeing now is a lot of shutdowns, which is positive, and bringing, trying to take that inventory out. And if the market changes such that they say, hey, we can't have Indonesian nickel. Yeah, you know, that PIRA compliant, whether, and, you know, not only because it's not green, but more importantly, it's got too much Chinese investment, then they'll have to incentivize these other guys to build because right now the price isn't there for them. You know, so So that's sort of that's a big market segmentation that people are waiting for, you know, to get paid for. And somebody told me recently that the benchmark intelligence guys are trying to promote a green nickel and green copper pricing that they want to follow. I don't know what the criteria is to actually reproduce it, but I don't know who's going to pay for it.
Yeah, I'm suspicious.
Yeah, but green commodities, like if you say you're green nickel and if you say you're green copper, you know, all else being equal, you might be preferred with respect to funding. So yeah, your capital costs might be lower than somebody else. But whether you'd make a top line number higher than the other guy, you won't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. We'll call that marketing, put green in your name.
Well, I mean, they do. They do. And then we see all these graphics, you know, over the last year, 2 years of carbon emissions. And so where do you fall? How many tons of carbon do you emit for every pound of nickel, right, pound of copper? You know, and that's probably important to a fund that may want to look at you and compare you to this guy that's maybe P50 and you're P10. But no one's going to pay you 15% more on the nickel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nickel one. And I would say the other one might be palladium.
Palladium. So we'll talk about that. Yeah.
Well, the thing about palladium is that we've sort of jumped past hybrids to fully electric vehicles, which, you know, need a lot of, you know, critical minerals and need a lot of infrastructure and need a lot of subsidies because they're still having, at least in the States, a hard time competing with the internal combustion engine. I think technically what we should have had was we should have had a longer life for hybrids because hybrids are an easier sale. Mm-hmm. They don't need the infrastructure. Nobody's worried about, you know, hey, my battery won't start because it's too cold. I could just go on the internal combustion engine and that'll work. Right. Yeah. You know, and then if I got to drive another 300 kilometers, I'm not worried that the battery is going to give out and I don't have a recharging station. I could just fuel up. So especially in the Western U.S., and Canada, period. So I think besides Vancouver, if I go other places in Canada, I don't see very many EVs.
No.
And so that's probably wearing thin a bit, but if they went back to the hybrids, I'm sure that people would be more, akin to doing that. And a lot of people just drive 20 kilometers a day back and forth and could recharge at their house. You know, use less fuel. I mean, we have one and, you know, we fuel up maybe once every 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. You know, that would be me.
Yeah. So those kind of cars, especially the ones we drive in North America, the catalytic converters there use palladium and they use more palladium in the hybrid vehicles. And so that could be a turn. But again, with any of these hated sectors, you want to be in the lowest quartile. You know, that way you can live through the issues.
Right, right. Well, it sounds like, I just want to summarize it, is you're becoming, or the market's becoming more optimistic in the gold and precious metals. The mid is, it looks like we're changing here. That should be very encouraging for investors. It sounds like you're still, even now, you're really bullish on the price of copper and really the challenge and from now until the end of the year, at least minimally.
I'm definitely bullish on copper. You know, there are the near term issues with China growth and U.S. you know, potential recession or growth, which doesn't actually seem to be a problem right now. I think it's more on the supply side, and on the supply side, I can definitely see that can't come on. You know, that this number is not going to meet, this
right.
This demand level. So I think copper has become less of a, let's say, an EV or a carbon neutral technology story rather than a supply constrained story.
Yeah. And that's sitting right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. And then other industrial metals like nickel and palladium look interesting because they're heated.
Yeah.
But it's somewhat of a wait and see mode, but not rushing to buy them. But they're looking interesting because they're so
heavy. Yeah. And I'd say the other one in the critical span is the rare earths are looking interesting again, but you got to really understand them. You got to really under soup to nuts, you know, how it's going to work. And most of these critical minerals, the big deal isn't mining them. It's processing them. So if you don't have a management team that understands processing and how, you know, what product you can produce, you know, that's really where you got to understand it. It's not gold where you produce a fungible product and anybody can do it. It does take a certain expertise and not all, everybody has it. And most of that expertise really is in China. So if you can find that expertise out of China, that's got a lot of comparative advantage.
Excellent. All right, Joe. Well, you don't really need any introduction, but please give your services a shout out. Where can people find you if they want to use your services and use your research?
Yeah, well, it's explorationinsights.com. You know, it's a weekly publication on everything we talk about right now and talking about some companies I'm covering, meaning I own. And or am selling or following or whatever. And then we pick up every now and then some thematics like we just talked about in today's interview.
Got it. Well, I will put all of this in the show notes and just make it very apparent. So anybody that wants to reach out to you or use your services. Joe, it's always a pleasure. I just, you're on the Mount Rushmore of people who do this sort of thing. So I appreciate you coming on so much.
Great. Thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.